Welcome to the House of Strauss on the Athletic Podcast Network.
You saw 18 minutes of the second half, they get a 176 offensive rating. Did you consider calling more post-ups for Kristaps during that period?
I didn't.
All right, it's a serious question. They started trapping.
Let's have a real question by a real.
There it is.
There you go. Hubie Brown voice. There you go.
There it is.
You're Ethan Strauss. You're podcasting in your 2015 Prius.
It's amazing how long Hubie's been doing it, man.
I mean, I got to interview him 10 years ago almost with Jack Ramsey. And they were old then.
I mean, I was watching clips of Dennis, I think it was Dennis, it might have been Dennis Rodman's rookie season against Larry Bird. He was guarding Larry Bird for the first time, and I have this wrong, but I think it was Hubie announcing that game, and I was, oh my God, I mean, this is over three decades ago. This is incredible.
We know you got to go backwards to go forwards many times.
It's like those God figures, like Pop, you know, they go like so far back, you can't even remember when it started.
Hubie Brown, Larry Brown, I'm trying to think of more like old forever.
Bernie Sanders has been old his whole
life. Bernie Sanders is a great one.
Any clip you see of him, he's an old
Have you ever seen the bit of Bernie Sanders as a 90-year-old, 56-year-old man?
That's exactly it. That's exactly it.
Hi, how you doing? I'm hanging in. How are you? I'm not so bad. It's good to have you here. I might be from an alternate universe. I don't know. But what I said to myself was, we don't get a fair shot in the mainstream media. So I said, what the heck? What the hey?
What the hell? What the hell?
Yeah, I would interview myself. So here we are.
Old your whole life. It's something to aspire to. I feel like I don't have it. I feel like I have the opposite. I still get carded. I've gotten carded at the Cosmopolitan as recently as a few months ago at Summer League. So That shit
flips on you in a hurry.
Oh, I bet.
I was that guy. Oh, my God. Everyone thinks I'm younger than I actually am. I was running strong into like my mid-30s, and then a switch flipped, and then all of a sudden, like, you're like 52, right? I'm like, no, I'm just... You know what it is? It starts like when the kid thing starts really getting to you.
Mm.
So like, these might be the last days record. Jade's another one where Jade's been like,
no, I'm going the opposite way. It's gotten me younger.
Maybe I need some sort of skincare product because he's just hanging on my face all day. I mean, he's working in concert with gravity to make me older.
I wish it were physical afflictions that were the cause.
Let's go, Nate. Let's get Nate Jr. out there.
No, Nate. Nate looks at me, and because Nate's always wanting to do things, and I'm often saying I can't, and I think it's inspiring Nate to either not have kids or put it off for longer. I don't know what Nate's plans are.
I know what Nate's plans are. I know exactly what they are. When he commended me for my choice of vehicle, you know, this makes a lot of sense. I said, oh, yeah, Nate, what do you drive? And he's can't even say
boom.
It.
Boom. Bugatti?
Basically,
he rides like Zach now.
I'm like, yo, don't humor me. He was because I drive a minivan. And he's like, oh man, that's, you know what? A lot of people are resistant to that. You know, I'm like, man, I just do it because I got a big family.
It's better than an SUV. Like, it does a better job than an SUV. It has more space. It gets better gas mileage. You're not, as long as you're not like going bouldering off road. Like, you're just, guess what? You're just as much of a family person if you have some crappy SUV crossover as a minivan. So you might as well have something that actually does the job better.
Nate meant it honestly, but it did sound patronizing.
The reassuring pat on the back, little buddy, I'm telling you, doing it. Like, what are you driving, Nate? And then, as he like leaves Back to the Future flame trails behind him.
I mean, here's the thing. I think that people with kids often make it sound worse than it is to people without kids, because to acknowledge the good part.
How many you got, Ethan?
I got one. Oh. I know. I know you guys. I know you guys have three.
Call that parenting.
No, I know. I know. No, I know it gets exponentially harder.
That's a hobby right there, right now. Right.
That's a Saturday project.
It's like having a pet iguana is the way you view it. But what I'm saying is that you can't relay the part that's good because it feels inherently condescending to say to somebody who doesn't have kids, well, now my life has meaning. You know, I used to be where you were, where your life was meaningless. Your life had no meaning. But now my life has meaning.
That laugh?
I hear that shit all the time.
That was a hearty ha ha.
Yeah, that was a ha ha of a man who knows full well. Like, my life doesn't really need any meaning. If that's what meaning is, y'all can keep all the meaning you want.
All right. Well, I'm going to get a close up here because we're going on vacation for a couple of days together up to Tahoe. So we're going to see the full glory of the day to day Strauss life with the child. A lot riding on this. You better make this appear idyllic or I'm never reproducing.
Well, some fans, some people in NBA Twitter and maybe even some Mavericks fans might even want that. They might even advocate for no Nate Duggins in the world after I see some of this scorn. Look, we'll get into that later. Jade, are we set up for the intro?
By the way, parents always like to show off with their kids, so it's going to be a lot of pomp and circumstance, Nate. You're going to get sold.
No, you're not.
Remind me later, too, by the way. I got a good.
If it were an hour, like you might get sold. But being there overnight, you're going to see firsthand. Like they can't keep the charade going that long. Sooner or later, the realness comes out. And
it's not a park trip, right? It's not a birthday party. You're right. That's a good point.
I don't know what to expect. Hey, we talk about physical fitness a lot, but there's another side to the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. He says, getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for my body and mind. And I would agree. I would say so. The results don't lie. He's the greatest 17th season player in the history of the NBA, if not in the history of sports entirely. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at calm.com/Strauss. That's calm.com/Strauss. Check it out, folks.
You always charge a guy with a gun. With a knife, you run away. Charge with a gun. With a knife, you run.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming to the House of Strauss. Hosted by Ethan Strauss, the author of the upcoming book, Victory, a book about the dynasty and also about KD. Gonna be out real soon. April 14th. Gonna take you to the moon.
Up and down on the moon at this point.
That's right. Ethan Strauss. He's writing a book about KD.
Almost like a powder.
I hope KD paid his taxes. This week's guest on the show, ESPN's Amin El-Hassan. And also from the Dunked On podcast, Mr. Nate Duncan. Enjoy the show.
Oh, we are ready. Okay, so we'll do the intro. This is House of Strauss. We are joined by...
High energy?
Oh, no high energy. I can only... Look, man, high energy was pre-kid or early kid.
That's 2018.
No high energy.
No Ray Ethan. What are we getting here out of this relationship?
And one small step for man.
Hey, everybody, it's the high energy intro. We are headed into 2020. We are heading up to Tahoe in the winter. I would like the sound of snowshoeing, the sound of mush, 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 mush.
Mush! Mush!
Maybe some barking huskies as though we are in Alaska. The whoosh sound of the wind when you are going down idyllic ski scopes. I can't even pronounce it correctly because I've never gone skiing in my life because I'm from San Diego. My parents didn't love me enough to take me out to the mountains in the wintertime. In addition, I want the sound of screaming, crying babies because that's all Nate Duncan is going to be hearing upcoming. Welcome to 2020!
Oh, man.
You're Nate's seas.
I thought we were going to get also the sound of screeching tires as your non-all-wheel drive car drives off the road.
Yeah, well, Nate's trying to get me up there. Nate's trying to get me to dance with the devil in the pale moonlight and go non-all-wheel up to Tahoe.
You can drive up there with all-season tires if it's not actively snowing. I believe
it. No, look, I relate it. You know, it's Allie wants to be, she wants to be cautious about it, but that's neither here nor there. What is here presently is two of the favorite guests of this podcast. We are so happy to have one Amin El Hassan and Nate Duncan. Two people I would say rank high in podcast popularity, and also you know, when they do psychological profiles, what's your personality type? Two who would rank high in the disagreeability. I don't think either of you care at all if someone disagrees with you and you stick to your guns, which makes you great podcasters. That is Jade, the thing we're doing now where I'm going to tell you about you. Yes. That is the yes. You too. I'm going to tell you about you. You're highly disagreeable.
Let me tell you about you.
Agree.
Does disagreeable mean like people disagree with you a lot, or that you don't care that people disagree with you?
Contrarian?
I think it's the latter.
You're the contrarian.
I think it's the latter. You're going to express how you feel. You're not going to worry about ruffling any feathers. You're just going to say it.
Disagreeable means that you disagree with people, not that they disagree with you.
You disagree with people, not that they disagree with you. I just think the word agreeable generally means that you're trying to maybe mold yourself, not to make waves, to go along, to get along, as some people do. And I see the two of you as the opposite, where you're just not going to do that. You're going to express how you feel and just not worry about the consequences. Now, whether disagreeable is the right definition for that, I don't know, but I think that correctly describes what you do.
Wow. It's also like pretty insulting.
It's not insulting. It's the highest compliment I can pay somebody.
I'm like disagreeable. Oh, wow. Boy, I'm just basking in the sun of that compliment.
I think it's a huge compliment. As we head into 2020, when everybody on social media is terrified of being judged one way or the other, it is a high compliment that the two of you do not give a fuck, that you're thinking about your opinion. You're not doing it thoughtlessly or to be contrarian. It's just that you don't care and you're going to say it because you believe it. I think that's a very high compliment this day and age.
Well, I think it's objectively an insult to call me disagreeable. But I'm at the same time proving your point because yes. I don't give a shit. There you go. You perfectly encapsulated your own point there. I just fell right in.
HA Council, may we hear from you?
You know, what's the funny thing is, until the events of this week, I did not know that there was like a niche market of people who don't like Nate Duncan.
Man.
I just assumed everybody liked Nate. Like,
me too.
Because it's just – I just figured like everyone wants nuanced takes and information and like kind of siphon out the theatrics and emotion out of all of this. And I think Nate does a great job of that. I'm not saying you got to agree with everything he said, but
– are these real people though?
No, these are real people.
Or Twitter bots.
No, have blogs. Some of them have NBA Twitter followings. Yep.
Some of them even dare to show themselves in public and then live with the scorn and the hurt for years afterward of one famous Ethan Strauss blowing them off in person.
Meet him in Temecula, you know?
Wait, did I blow anybody off? I mean, was that a thing?
Isn't that the story with you and old dude?
Oh, I don't know. I have no idea.
Space goes coast to coast?
Nah, I don't know.
Did I give away too much?
Okay. I think that might have been somebody else, but I can't remember one way or the other.
Somebody who had a story of like, I saw Ethan Strauss at Summer League. And
hold up.
What?
Did this come as a result of the dust up with Ricky?
Well, that's how I learned about people's disdain for Nate. Yeah.
Okay, let's get into that.
By the way, if Nate didn't say,
what did you say, Nate? I'm not serious. I'm just joking.
Serious question.
If you didn't say that, I think you would have been fine.
Yeah, you would have been safe. Well, let's do the expository. The expository because the expository
play the clip, Ethan.
I mean, I know you will. I mean, this is a great setup for it because the expository is necessary because I came home and I tried to describe to Allie what happened. And it was tough because she doesn't know who Rick Carlisle is. You know, she knows Nate, And I was trying to explain the joke that Nate was making, and I found it difficult to explain. It reminded me of when I was in Israel, and I was trying to explain American football to an Israeli, and I just got lost in this world, and I couldn't explain what joke you were making to Rick Carlisle that set him off and caused him to grievously insult you in front of a media scrum. So, Nate, can you recapitulate what happened?
So I guess it goes back to a few days earlier when Kristaps Porzingis, who's 7'3", was being criticized by some of the reactionaries in NBA media for not posting up enough. And that's a terrible strategy. Rick Carlisle had a long explanation that I was in total agreement with about why it's a bad idea for Porzingis to post up. And then the next game, they go out there and they absolutely kill the Warriors, have one of the better offensive performances that you're ever going to see. And it was with Porzingis playing the way that Carlisle wants to play. Didn't post him up one time the entire game. So in a way of just like, you know, we can like establish a little banter here and, you know, hey, nice. I agree with you. And just, you know, let's not take ourselves too seriously. Made an observation to Rick Carlisle. I guess you could just play it now, Jade.
Coach, first 18 minutes of the second half, they get a 176 offensive rating. Did you consider calling more post-ups for Kristaps during that period?
No, I didn't.
All right, so serious question. They started trapping.
I just have a real question by a real journalist. Does anybody? Oh, go ahead.
I mean, yeah, what the fuck, Rick? You know?
Rick didn't realize that you were on his side and just got merely poking fun at the others.
Did he realize it but just not care? I mean, I would like to know.
I would say the vibe I got, now it's interesting to hear how Nate took it, but the vibe I got is that he didn't get that he didn't get the joke. He thought Nate was an ambassador for all these assholes who thinks that Porzingis should post up more.
Right.
No. I think he got it. I think he knows that like a 176 offensive rating is good. Like I'm going to give Rick Carlisle enough credit for that. I think he's just philosophically opposed to like any kind of joking around in that sense.
It is funny that he is the union leader of the coaches union, because I've thought about it when former coaches will complain about how set upon head coaches are and how the media is so mean to them. And I always think to myself, I mean, maybe Rick Carlisle is a great coach, but your ambassador to us is, shall we say, suboptimal, you know? Like, do we go with Steve Kerr? I don't know. You know, do we go with Stan Van Gundy when he was coaching? No. We're going to go with Rick Carlisle.
You know, Stan ain't no, like, I like Stan. Stan's my guy, but Stan ain't no saint when it comes to representing coaching. Do you remember the whole thing with the Luke Walton thing?
No, he's
where like Stan was like, he wanted to boycott all ESPN interviews because somebody asked Luke Walton about something that LeVar Ball said. And I was like, that's what I went off on Stan on TV. I was like, man, like, you don't like it.
But I'm just talking about general friendliness. Like, as a PR ambassador.
Well, here's the thing. Do you think Rick Carlisle is friendly away from, like, if Rick Carlisle got fired? I'll give you a great example. Tom Thibodeau's amazing guy.
Yeah.
An amazing guy. It's like all you have to do is take a clipboard and a basketball away from him, and all of a sudden he smiles.
Oh,
he's got jokes. He's
it's
friendly.
Incredible. I mean, I don't want to digress too much. I remember that gap year he took after the Bulls job. He was hanging around Warriors training camp. He was the jolliest guy I had ever met. He was.
We hit him at Sloan, Ethan.
Yeah. Oh, he was great at Sloan. I mean, at training camp, he was having fun from the outside looking in of how stressed out Ron Adams was. And I remember I was talking to him, and Ron Adams was so frustrated with how the Warriors were goofing off in preseason after winning the championship. And Thibodeau holds his fingers up to Ron Adams' ears and looks at me and goes, look at it, feel it, feel the steam coming out of his ears. He's just having the time of his life.
New Britain, Connecticut.
Hard hitting New Britain.
Stan Van Gundy, PJ Carlissimo, Jeff Van Gundy, like the list of guys who, when they get away from basketball, turn into interesting, thoughtful, insightful, funny people is staggering. And then you just give them a clipboard and put a basketball nearby, and they turned into assholes.
And they want to bash Nate with the clipboard, apparently. Oh. Well, you know, okay, so I want to talk basketball, but this is a little interesting as far as the media world. I did not know either. I was like Amin. I figured Nate's approval rating very high because he does such a great job and is dispassionate in many ways. But, so at the risk of further offending Nate, I think part of what's happening here is that Nate is the alpha nerd. He's the alpha nerd. He embraces the nerdy stuff, and it's a sea of nerds. Wow. All of us on NBA. I'm throwing myself in there as a nerd. But Nate is confident. He's very confident in what he believes. It's part of the disagreeability. And I think that might poke and prod at some of the insecurities of people who don't feel that way. What say you, Nate?
So, yeah, I don't know if it's necessarily even that. So much as it's just a lot of people just don't want objective analysis, right? Like you don't talk enough about my team. Oh, but if you do talk about my team, it has to be only positive stuff that is exactly how I see my team. That's kind of what it is. And so my reaction is like, all right, you know what? Like, this isn't for you. You know, if these people come in my mentions and are saying like, this take on this team is terrible. I'm like, look, you don't follow me. What happened was some blogger who's basically like a team cheerleader in the local market retweeted me or posted something on Reddit or whatever. And so now you don't know who I am, and you're going to come in my mentions telling me like what a moron I am about your team. So like this, my analysis just isn't for you. Like, you don't follow me. You don't know anything about me. Other than that I said something about your team that you disagreed with, that more often than not turns out to be right, frankly, because I think I've got more objectivity about this than most of these local teams and some of the people who are like half fans, half bloggers covering them. So that's fine. Like, so my rule at this point is like, I need to actually engage with the people as an independent in my mentions that follow me and support me. So if you don't follow me and you come in my mentions talking shit, I'm just going to block you immediately. Like, there's no reason for me to wait.
I think part of it's the blocking. Yeah. I think people get mad about the blocking.
Really?
I think
Here's my thing. Here's my thing. Because we had this conversation at Showcase where Nate was talking about his block policy. And I said, I don't like to block because I don't want people to have the satisfaction of knowing that they irritated me on any level.
But I don't care what they think. It's about my experience. On Twitter, it's about me even taking, you know, 0.5 of a second to read some dumb shit tweet by someone who doesn't follow me is a waste of my time.
I use the mute button liberally. Anyway, that's not the point. The point was, at the time, I thought we were just talking about, or not we were just talking about, I thought the people who would be these perpetrators we're all just like you said, these fans that went on Reddit and saw something, know nothing about you, and they come in and like they just heard you say something about their favorite toy, and now they want to come at you. I didn't know that within, and I use this term very loosely, basketball media, right? That there were people who were resentful or like didn't, because my thing is like it's the same thing. Ethan is like I don't know. It's not about the joke. It's just they don't like Nate.
No, this was an opportunity for a guy who was very confident in his opinions. He had been toppled in a way, and they were dragging. It was like Saddam's statue getting dragged through the streets of yes. A certain quarter of NBA Twitter.
I guess right. For me, there's a lot of things that me and Nate have not agreed upon. Talking about basketball wise, but I've never once, more than probably anybody else doing this, I've never once felt a bias creep in or kind of favoritism or whatever it is in your opinions. Not saying I agree with them, but I'm saying I think they are actually have been arrived upon in a fairly emotionless manner. And so for me, like anyone who's coming to the table like that, like I don't know how you can be mad unless they're just wild wrong about everything. And again, we know that Nate's not wild wrong about everything. So it's like maybe it is what you're talking about, Ethan. Maybe he represents an ideal that they wish they were. And so, like you said, you know,
the number one thing that biased people do is accuse other people of bias.
Ah, projection. We're getting Freudian.
Well, it's not even necessarily that. It's just like if you are biased, you have your overly rosy view as the truth. And so anyone who doesn't subscribe to that overly rosy view, the only possible way that you wouldn't be subscribing to that is that that person is biased. Mm. Not that, oh, it's just a legitimate difference of opinion.
Yeah, I think that there's something to that.
First take culture.
Do people accuse you of bias, Nate? Has anyone ever said, oh, you just like so-and-so?
I see you get accused of arrogance. Like, I see arrogance.
Yeah. Well, no, but that's one I get accused of a lot, right? Like, yeah, the idea that too. Because I state my point with some amount of, like, clarity, I guess?
Yeah. And we can be wrong. We're frequently wrong. It's very unpredictable. It's sports. But the thing is, with Nate, I know that Nate will adjust. If the reality changes, he'll change his opinion. You know, Nate and I are arguing about the potential of Hero over in Miami. And I think more positively, Nate, a little more circumspect. If he just has a killer sophomore season, then Nate will adjust. And that's typically how it goes. So it's so strange, I think, to be caught up in whatever the momentary analysis is. It's almost as though a lot of people fear that the media analysis will make it a reality. I felt that during the time with Kevin Durant, as though we actually had the power to make KD leave, was the assumption. Well, Andy Lou did. I mean, I didn't, but Andy Lou was the reason they left.
You gave Andy Lou voice.
I gave Andy Lou voice.
No one knew who Andy Lou was until you and Jade. Like, thought he was delightful, and the rest is history.
By the way, there is
something uniquely kind of Web 2.0 beautiful about the idea that I know, without a shadow of a doubt, without any confirmation from anywhere, I know for a fact, in my heart of hearts, that Kevin Durant knows absolutely who Andy Lou is.
Oh, he does.
It's so ridiculous. Like, if you think about, like, the Karl Malone ever know that Andy Lou of Utah back in like the 90s?
Andy Lutah.
Did Oscar Robertson know that Andy Lou of Milwaukee back in the 70s? Like, no. But Kevin Durant absolutely knows who Andy Lou is. I don't think we put enough credit to that. Well, like, that is truly the mountain.
You know, the unsung hero who tried his best and couldn't save the situation was actually Nate Duncan, because Kevin Durant loved Nate. I mean, that's an untold story. These two got along like a house on fire. So, you know, Nate almost kept Kevin Durant and just couldn't close the deal. He couldn't get the job done.
Might be overstating a few things.
No, you guys got along. I felt that he enjoyed how observant you were, and enjoyed having an opportunity to talk about basketball in the way you did. I know you don't want to say that, but I always thought that you two had a very good dynamic and a good rapport. But you just, you know, it wasn't something that was visible, I think, to fans, because typically you aren't necessarily wrangling people for interviews and articles. But they were a bit of an odd couple for a time, Nate and KD. And hey, you know, if you want to blame somebody, maybe don't blame Andy. Maybe don't blame me. Maybe Nate should have tried harder. What about that?
Oh, wow. Yeah. Nate had the power and you sat by and did nothing. Huh?
Yeah. Yeah. All that objectivity. Yeah,
that's right. The power that comes from, you know, maybe 10 to 15 conversations for 3 to 4 minutes in the locker room over a 2-year period, that kind of power.
Hey, that's not nothing.
Maybe if there were 18 or 19 conversations, we talk about the Warriors, how they bounce back this year.
I mean, that's not nothing. There are people in KD's inner circle who might want that kind of FaceTime. I don't know. But hey, I'm just throwing that
Let's
out
talk
there.
About the book.
Oh, the book? Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm thinking about the book right now, because I'm thinking about how I'm excited for it. I'm excited for it to come out.
What's it called?
The Victory Machine. I'm excited for it, but it has to come. And I didn't want to get too navel-gazing media analysis, but we're here now, so let's do it. I'm excited for it, but I also have trepidation, because anything you do comes with all this stuff, all this web 2.0. We were talking before the last game we were at, and I won't say who the writer is, but he just had a really successful article, an article that went viral. But it always comes with these emotional ramifications where you have the big article. Anything interesting that you share is interesting principally because people don't want to – somebody doesn't want it revealed to the world. And so when you reveal it to the world, there are people who are mad at you, or you don't know if they're mad at you, or you're checking in, or did I burn a bridge here? Did I burn a bridge there? So that's the way I'm looking at this book, where if it seems like I'm not excited for it, I'm very excited for it. I want to see what people think, what they take from it. But at the same time, I'm almost clenched, just like I am with this whole Minnesota getting aggregated situation where it says, oh God, here we go. Here's the roller coaster.
Oh yeah, that was you, huh?
we'll get into that later. We'll tease that. Well, Nate, sorry, you had some more Carlisle takes though. I want to get back to that.
Can we finish up with the book first? I was gonna say, should we reprise our conversation from dinner the other day of like
I might have been drunk. What was I saying?
The power rankings of like who's gonna be the most mad at you as a result of this book.
Oh no. I think that's gotta be a secret. Because sometimes you don't know. Sometimes you just don't know. You know, I sometimes don't possess that emotional intelligence. I remember when Luke Walton was coaching the Warriors during that win streak, and everybody was wondering, how good a coach is he? And I was on the Lebatard show, and Lebatard started just interrogating me on it, just making me answer the question. And I said, oh, you know, he's charismatic. He's got a lot of charisma. And so that's something that probably is a factor for coaches and coaching. And then later that day, I'm at Oracle Arena. I see Luke Walton. Luke goes, I heard you on the radio today. And I go, oh, yeah. Yeah. And he goes, yeah, you were asked about how good a head coach I would make. And I said, yeah, I said that you were charismatic. And Luke goes, that's all you said. And it was just very uncomfortable.
Well, no. he did that seriously, though?
Yeah.
He was dead serious.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Damn, that, man. Not you, too, Luke. That motherfucker like must really not like me, man.
It's like, how do I look in this outfit? You look great. Oh, you're saying I don't look good in all the other outfits? Like come on.
That's no, awful. But he was getting at something because I wasn't saying, oh, this guy's an X and O's genius.
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't convincing. I was not doing a good sell job on him being a good coach. I did not.
Ethan, my point is, it's like, I mean, you can't, I don't know, man. It's one of those things where I legitimately, if that were me in that situation, and it sounds like you were the same way, like you wouldn't even know. You're like, yeah, man, I was on the radio. Oh, thanks for listening. Like, it wouldn't even hit me. Like, yo, I said some things about you today. Mm. Right? Like, and so for him to take it that way, it just, I don't know, man. I thought Luke was one of the cool ones, man.
I think he is, but at that moment, his career. You didn't
curse like that?
No. You know, I don't. I think that there are some ways he could be described that would get under his skin. He is a human being.
Like what? I want to know because I've killed him on Game 7 many a time, and I want to know if he's harboring.
But he doesn't seem to care. I mean, I think if it gets back to him, he might. But
I've done it enough times. I'm pretty sure it got back to him.
He doesn't even acknowledge publicly that he made some mistakes.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of killed him on China, and you were ripping me for how much I killed him on China. I did. I still do. I don't think he cares. I mean, we talked about it. He didn't seem to care. He just doesn't seem to care. I'm sure I could say something that would be completely egregious where he would care, but he just doesn't seem to care.
If you're critical of a coach or a player, and then you're at a game and they're there, do you make it a point to approach them, or do you just make yourself available? And if he's got a problem, he can come up to me and talk about it.
The latter. Although it depends on the relationship. It depends on the relationship. But, you know, mostly the latter, because who are you necessarily to further bother somebody in addition to killing them, right? You have to present them the opportunity to say something, but do you really want to pile on? I think that's a consideration, well, but it's person specific.
Not pile on, but do you overtly make yourself, Nate, have you ever made yourself overtly available? Where, hey man, what's up? Like, I'm Nate Duncan. That's right.
Same Nate Duncan. It's a little arrogant of me to presume that the person even knows that's who I am, or that they even saw it. Certainly, there have been times, you know, probably 5 or 6 times that like players have talked to me about like something I tweeted or said on a podcast that someone, you know, put back to them, and my response is always, "Hey, you know what? Like, I'm glad to explain to you," because for me, it's not like with Ethan. A lot of times, it's, "Oh, I reported this." You know, for me, it's always, this is like some evaluation
right.
of your play. I always want to say, hey, this is like, if you think that I got something wrong, I'm willing to listen to you, but I also have my reasons for thinking it. I will explain it to you. And, you know, hopefully we can move on and you just understand that that's like the job that I'm doing. And then certainly if there are just in private conversations with executives, most of whom obviously I'm friendly with, then, you know, I certainly will say, hey, you know what, I said this, if it comes up, you know, or if they ask what I think of the moves, I'll be honest or whatever. Like, I definitely will share my opinion on that stuff. But, you know, I don't think it's been rare that someone has taken that type of stuff personally.
Those are the biggest grudge holding mother in the industry.
Yeah.
By far.
Yeah.
By far. Because the stories that get back to me about specific people.
Sam Presti.
No, Sam Presti is cool,
just,
man.
I'm just joking.
No, let me put it this way. It won't be an exec from a successful organization. Mm. How about that?
Can we talk about when Draymond got mad at Nate and they had it out and it was all cool? Nate, are you cool talking about that? Because that was hilarious. Never been. We can talk about it. Yeah. Can we? Okay. So, I'm trying to remember what happened there. It was that you were watching warmups and reporting on, or just relaying how people were shooting in warmups.
Oh yeah, I was talking about this with Hollinger the other day, because you know a lot of times you just don't get to see, especially young players, you don't get to see them shoot that much in a game. So I was like, I'm gonna. Like, just start, get there before the game. You know, same thing as, like, I mean, every NBA personnel scout, pro personnel guy who's worth his salt will do this, gets there, and, you know, we'll see, all right, how good is this guy shooting warm? It's like, it's more data for when, you know, a guy's taken 53 pointers that season. And so, like, I posted on Twitter for some people of, you know, how much, like, you know, if they're taking 50 shots or 70 shots a couple hours before the games, or just like, here's what the percentages, this might be interesting to people as far as like, okay, we're going to try and predict what this guy's shooting is going to be like going forward. Yeah. And so this player, hilariously, I did it for him. He was struggling shooting at the time.
I think he was on the Knicks. Was he on the Knicks? I'm trying to remember.
It was Kevin Knox.
Oh yeah.
And so, the exception was taken to the fact that I did this for Kevin Knox, but there also might have been exception taken to the fact that I did it for him as well. And this is a roundabout way of noting it. I wasn't aware that there is just like such there is just like such empathy for poor Kevin Knox.
It was a great exchange because, you know, Draymond was mad, but he wasn't. It was weirdly cordial. It was aggressively cordial, is what I would say. Where he was saying just how fucking stupid it was. That's fucking stupid. Like, that's fucking.
And so I argue back to him. I'm like, look, like pretty much every team tracks this stuff, right? Like the Spurs track it. Now, maybe part of the reason that he thought it was so dumb is because the Warriors like weren't actually really doing any player development at the time, and so they probably like weren't tracking that stuff. But like, most organizations that actually are developing players are doing that stuff, and I'm guessing the Warriors probably are. I mean, there are teams that have tracking devices in their practice facilities to say, you know, track practice shots. I mean, there's like, it's important data, you know, and as I said, every NBA pro personnel guy is going to do the same thing that I was doing. So it wasn't a very good argument. I told him that, but you know, it wasn't like it didn't like get out of hand or anything.
It didn't. It was a tense back and forth where you didn't back down and you kept reasserting your position and he kept reasserting his position. And then we all were watching it. And then Raymond Ritter started shuffling over nervously, not knowing what to do. But it ended fine enough. I think that it was ultimately you acquitted yourself well. And no harm, no foul. But it was super funny.
He was telling me that he thought it was completely stupid. I'm like, no, it's not stupid. Here's the reason. He may have said it a bit more colorfully than that. But again, like that, and this kind of ties in with the Carlisle thing too. The only thing in the entire saga that annoyed me was people thinking that like I would be remotely bent out of shape about it. Like what Carlisle said to me doesn't affect me in any way at all.
I think that's another instance of projection because I know you well.
Sure?
Because I know
you sure, Nate?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jay.
That it doesn't affect me?
Yeah, like do you look at your mentions and see people dunking on you and feel any twinge of anything, any twinge of that feels bad.
Well, let me ask you this, Jade. Why did you feel for me?
It's awkward. It was for me. It was going in the right. It was going in the right place. But then you know he's a dick, and that's awkward, right?
Well, okay. So I mean,
I don't like the whole. Okay, yeah. So I feel for me personally, I think part of it is I'm your friend, and so I see people being unfair in a way, and so there's a twinge of that. But I also believe that you don't care. You know, I know you well enough to think you don't care. But I think for the vast majority of people, that would probably send them into a shame spiral, right? I know I personally would not want to look at my mentions and drink in what's happening after something like that. So I just wouldn't interface with it. But I think for a lot of people, and this might get back to the projection, they might be projecting what they would be doing under that circumstance. But I do believe you. I do believe you that you don't care. I do.
Well, and that's what I'm saying, Jade, is like I appreciate your empathy, but at the same time, I wasn't like freaked out about it. You know, like the Mavs TV guy like afterwards was like, yeah, you know, he'll just do that to everyone. Like, don't worry about it. I'm like, hey, you know what? Like, I realize that that's not a 100% traditional thing to do. Now, the coach in Golden State, if I did that, he would totally just laugh about it as well, you know, and then it would just be a chance to kind of add some levity. And, you know, those are some of the moments that a lot of times in interviews are actually interesting.
It was the comment that he makes. What was it? Can we get a real journalist question? That was the stinger.
Well, but it's a stinger made without knowing anything about Nate is the thing. You know, if Rick Carlisle knew the entire body of Nate's work and this was his assessment, that would be one thing. But and this
that's
is how
why I think he didn't know that Nate was coming. The joke was, I mean, if every joke is a pro and an anti, right? It's pro Carlisle. Carlisle's not the butt of the joke. The butt of the joke are the people clamoring for a guy whose center of gravity is somewhere between his nipples to get more post-ups, right? Those are the people who are the butt of the joke. But I don't think Carlisle got that joke was coming from that angle. I think he took it as Nate being an ambassador for those people, which is why he dismissed them as rapidly as he did. But maybe it's just that Carlisle doesn't like playing around of any sort,
I think he just I think there's a couple of reasons. One is he just didn't want it to be any more of a story. Like he was just done with the story and the topic overall, regardless of whether I was quote unquote on his side or not. I think he's also is just against the idea of he doesn't like doing the media, and so the fact that I would like make a 5-second long joke,
wasting my time, Nate.
Yeah, exactly. That time is so precious. So I think so that, you know, and again, like that's I realize not anyone would do that. I've gotten to like this point by
he had important things to do, like talk about how Steven Silas getting sick makes the Mavericks the most feminist organization in the history of the world. Wait, you know, he had important stuff.
Dave, by the way, what was the follow up question?
Oh, it was going to be about like the Warriors trapping Luka at half court and like how they dealt with that. I mean, I did sort of think to myself of like, okay, Rick, would you like to ask me like how you deal with being in an organization that has just like a terrible culture and has had all these awful Me Too incidents, like, oh, would that be a more serious question? Is that what you want?
That was what I was effectively referencing obliquely, though, in the weird tweet about Steven Silas being sick, allowed a Mavericks coach. Was it the front of the bench? Was it? I'm trying to remember.
The first he texted everyone saying that it was the first time ever that there were two women on the front of the bench, one on each team in that Spurs game, because that one guy was sick.
Yeah, that was weird. We should even cut that because it's going to make us seem bitter towards old Ricky. But that was preposterous. Yeah. Nah, I don't know. Leave it in.
We already, Jade already established next time, that when he posted the video.
Yeah,
years ago.
It's too late.
Next time, ask him if he thinks Oswald did it. You know what I mean?
Oswald has been shot.
You know,
there's the man with a gun.
So okay. I like getting into the media analysis and the weird dynamic of getting piled on. I want to see with Amin. Amin, it's funny to me that your version of this was wearing baggy jeans.
That was totally.
Amin had fun with that.
Yeah,
because it was funny. Because like my thing is this: it's like I'm always on the side of funny. If it's funny, it's funny. And people who get caught up on who it's funny at the expense of, to me, I never get this.
So this is something I wanted to get your take on. So I did get a lot of amusement from many of my mentions after this incident, and of just like hilariously ridiculous takes on it. You know, again, like, I don't care if it's like, ooh, look at that guy, haha, cringeworthy, et cetera. Like, you know, again, that doesn't affect me in any way. But one of the hilarious things, one of those espoused by a couple of quote unquote media members as well, was how dare he waste this precious time in the scrum
with
10 second joke.
My God.
Gold. This is blood diamonds.
Oh,
there are children in Africa who lost limbs to mindless time.
I mean, you violated some unwritten rules. It sounded like
it's pretty much as bad as you just walking outside Chase Center and barricading the children's hospital that's adjacent to it. It's really bad.
Have you ever guys been at a regular season game where the scrum were basically like there was a question that wasn't taken because the scrum looked like press conferences in the movies? Or suddenly everyone's going to be quiet and then one person's going to say, "Coach, you said that this, da da da." Have you ever seen that happen in a regular season?
Steve, we need an update on Alan Smilagic. Steve, when's he coming back?
It's not fair to the people who are going to say a great question, like talk about Luka's performance tonight. It's not fair to those people. The opportunity cost is just too high for that 15 seconds.
But even if that is their question, like there's never been a regular season matchup where like I didn't get my talk about question in there because someone else took it up making jokes.
That's like, never happened. Happen. No, that doesn't
talk
happen.
About question.
The thing that can happen is.
Coach.
Sounds like, are you guys ready? The end of every scrum sounds like this. Anything else?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, thanks, coach.
There is an etiquette to it, though. The etiquette, because I got yelled at when I was a young cub, the etiquette is if you have a question that's not entirely germane, you ask towards the end. If you ask at the beginning, there are people on deadline who want to get their questions in from the AP.
That's just Marcus giving you a hard time.
Nah,
man.
Marcus doesn't. Marcus is the king of the funny question. I mean,
he does it.
Yeah, Marcus will ask.
But who told you? I'm not saying that that's the philosophy. I'm saying that that's Marcus.
It was somebody from the AP who you wouldn't have heard of them. But
Wow.
So
John Krasinski said that, huh?
No, John wouldn't do that. God, John's way too nice, Johnny A. But speaking of John, I've been throwing
great joke, wrong audience.
That's
what it was.
Yeah, I've been.
And by the way, so you know the sanctity of the post game scrum. A PR employee for a team heard the story and told me, "Yeah, Rick should probably just lighten up a little bit." It wasn't. Oh yeah, you should reduce time. Those questions, like we set him out there, and you know he's only got exactly 10 minutes and blah blah. And he's like, nah, Rick could just lighten up a little bit.
My name's Amino Hassan. This is Hate Hard with Amino. So Dallas Mavericks head coach Rick Carlisle got into a little bit of a tiff with his point guard Rajon Rondo on the sideline the other night.
He is just telling him, sit your you-know-what down.
Afterward, he was a little, shall we say, agitated with the media.
Regarding play calling?
I'm not going to get into that.
Was it that coach's decision made for basketball reasons or disciplinary reasons?
It was made because I'm the coach, and that was the decision that I made at the time.
Tough talk from Rick Carlisle. Now, I know what you're thinking. Hate hard approved, right?
Now, how many other ways you want me to answer the same question?
Wrong. My guy, Tim McMahon of ESPN Dallas, hit him with the pop, pop, counterpunch, hate hard approved.
Now, how many other ways you want me to answer the same question?
One, you haven't answered it yet.
Taking Rick Carlisle's hate hard and knocking it out the park. My name's Amino Hassan. This is Hate Hard with Amino.
Guys, I've been thrown into the aggregation vortex, as happens, and I guess you just have to embrace it, because I relayed that there was a little bit of buzz at the G League showcase of executives, you know, looking at that Minnesota situation, perhaps, and it then gets aggregated and excerpted as though I'm saying that, you know, I'm reporting that Karl-Anthony Towns isn't happy there, even though that's not really what I'm saying.
So what exactly did you write?
I mean, I don't know off the top of my head, Nate. I was just like dinner. I was all drunk. I was just way too drunk to remember. Let me see. Let me see what it was. I don't know. I mean, I can just recapitulate what it is.
Because I actually think that the semantics of this matter.
They do, because I just ripped them a new one today. Based on that reporting, Ethan. So thanks a lot.
Wait, who did you rip? What did you rip?
Wait, you ripped it a new one for wanting out of there?
For call it, yeah, absolutely.
Why shouldn't he want out of there? It sucks.
I know it sucks. I'm 100% here for Minnesota sucks and is probably the worst run organization in professional sports, including the Knicks.
That's a statement.
They made it out the first round of the playoffs one time in their history. They have a win percentage of below 400 for their history, right? They haven't won two playoff games in three collective bargaining agreements. They are like by far the worst front, but that's not why. I ripped them because at the beginning of the year, this motherfucker who disappeared for three playoff games, came back for the elimination game, played decently, beat his chest, and then disappeared for the game five elimination, has the nerve to tell us, y'all sleeping on us, don't sleep on us. You're lucky we allow you to even be in this conversation. A playoff.
Okay, so here's the thing. I'm talking about potential. Look, the Warriors' gambit in this whole thing, and they can't admit to it because they have to present the future of their next championship is going to come with Steph and Russell and Clay in the backcourt, when in reality there's probably a bigger game afoot, right, where they would maybe want to bring a superstar, another superstar, yeah, to Golden State. Every plausible team is keyed on Antetokounmpo, yada, yada. The Warriors have been monitoring Karl-Anthony Towns' situation in Minnesota. He's under contract until 2023-24, but it's less reason than Antetokounmpo to be thrilled with his team's trajectory. This was a topic among multiple team executives at the recent G League showcase, with a few relaying word that Towns is unhappy in Minnesota. The Wolves currently sit at 13th in the Western Conference.
That's all you need.
This
is a topic among multiple team executives.
And they could
relaying word.
Yeah, and they could be playing a certain game, right? They could be wish casting that they hope it's this. So that's something that's discussed, right? That isn't the same as I don't know Karl-Anthony Towns, right? Last year when I said that Kevin Durant wasn't very happy, that was something that I think was more apparent on a direct day-to-day basis. But you know, this is you go to showcase. This is more or less the buzz. But I shouldn't be surprised that it gets aggregated and run with and everything else. But well, I guess
it's newsworthy. It's absolutely newsworthy the way that you wrote it, for sure.
And this I talked about it
on my show.
This is what I want to say real quick. My biggest, like last year, my whole year, I spent hoping and praying that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant would end up on the same team. Now, it's a wish fulfilled, but a wish deferred because he's hurt. So I've had to wait until next year for that to happen. Because I love it when people can't see the impending tidal wave about to destroy everything that they love. And they say, come on, guys, let's go to the beach. And that's what those two guys did. And it'll hit. It took a while, but it'll hit. My next tidal wave that I'm praying for is I want this D'Angelo Russell, Carl Anthony Towns, Devin Booker. I'm praying. I wanted to happen more than anything in the world. I love when these things happen because the belief that everyone, and then it'll be all nothing but wins from there on out. How can they not see what I see?
You want the prank that God plays on you when he gives you what you want. That's what you want to have happen.
It's actually the opposite. It's a Faustian bargain is what it's called. The devil gives you. When you say, I want this, and then you get it, and then it comes with all these other side attachments. Like, oh, it turns out he's an asshole. Or, none of the three of us play any defense? Oh, I thought you were going to do that. Like, it's coming. They're going to average like a defensive rating 115 per 100 while they're on the floor together, and no one's going to be like, it's my fault. It's always going to be the other guy's fault.
So I think they have that dream, they have that vision. I'm not sure how it could actually be realized given
Phoenix. Phoenix is the only place dumb enough to make this happen. I'm telling you right now.
You want
an owner who, no questions asked, give me all this incoming salary and then soon quickly afterward find other people to blame. Because they're the ones that legitimately have a chance to do it. I mean, you think about a deal with Minnesota where you get centered around Ayton, right? And a bunch of smaller things. And then for Golden State, I think it would probably be a three-way deal.
Yep.
Where they get the stuff, actual stuff they need.
I want to go two places in this conversation. The first is I think that we are about contracts. That's the first topic. And second topic, I want Nate and Amin's thoughts on what you would do if you were actually the GM of the Wolves. But we'll start with the first thing. Because I see there's this reaction to this, you know, if this is the case, right? Of, well, he signed the contract, so good luck, buddy. You know, good luck, buddy. I don't think that everybody recognizes.
Are these NFL people saying this?
No, I think some fans, some media.
Media? Let name
local.
Them so
there's a hear. Local. There's a local guy in Minnesota media. I don't. I don't think.
Wow! I just name it.
I don't think that there's a recognition that when people are at the absolute top of their profession, contracts don't actually have the same stickiness as they do for everybody
else.
Dude,
forget about the top of their profession. I seen Jimmy Jackson pull that. Like, you know,
Jimmy Jackson. Kidding? I've seen Steven Jackson pull that.
Steven Jackson got an extension, and Steven Jackson got an extension with no intention of serving even a month of it.
So, there's this thing of the problem is that they have discretionary value, right? Where it's you're on this contract, but there's no way to take the contract away if you start not jogging back on defense. You know, there's no way to do anything about that.
Yeah, you can Vince Carter it. He's one of the original practitioners.
And that might have damaged his reputation. But you look at, and I'm not saying whatever's going on with Towns one way or the other. But let's say you're a superstar in this league who isn't happy with his team and you look at Anthony Davis right now, right? Anthony Davis took a hit to his reputation in theory. The exit from that team was ugly and bad. It was drawn out. It was terrible. But is anybody right now looking at Anthony Davis and going, man, you made the wrong decision. Man, I feel bad for you. Oh, that was the Faustian bargain that Amin just mentioned. No. It worked out. He's relevant in a way he hasn't been before. He's contending for a championship. He's in LA. It was all worth it. And so, we talked about it like it was pre-agency that Anthony Davis was getting out before the contract was up. But maybe it's just there is no contract anymore for these guys because their value is discretionary. And in some situations, it's totally worth it to, in the ugliest possible way, just force your way out of these teams.
Well, so a few points here. I largely agree with you. This is somewhat different from AD because he did everything you reasonably could do to try to win in New Orleans, and he spent 7 years there. And they clearly failed to build a team around him. They were trending the wrong direction. So understand, and he had one more year left on his contract. And he also, you know, there wasn't an indication that he like wasn't trying. He asked for the trade, and then the team shut him down to the maximum extent that they could. You know, there was never an indication he wasn't going to play hard, et cetera, et cetera. Towns, this is the first year of a 5-year extension. And hey, you know, I got no problem with him, you know, morally, whatever, like do what you need to do to be happy, to get where you want to be. You know, you have the power, use it. I got no problems with that. But that does make it a little bit of a different situation. And, you know, it's probably even more hopeless for him right now than it looked for AD at an equivalent time in his contract.
Well, that's the next question, which is, what do you do if you're the GM of the Wolves, right? Let's say, let's put him in a place of he's not requesting his way out. And you kind of don't know where he's at, right? Where yeah. things aren't great right now. The team has been going nowhere. They have this bloated contract for Wiggins. What is your game plan, Nate than Amin? What do you do to fix the situation? And if there isn't a path, if you do have that fear of he's going to want out, what is the plan B?
Yeah, I mean, that would put them in a major problem. I think I would start, if I were Gerson Rosas, by getting in this magical time machine car that Amin thinks that I own. And going back to draft day of 2019 and drafting someone other than Jared Culver, that'd probably be the start. Because
the magic van.
Or trading that pick. I mean, they made a nice move to move up to 6 and get him, but or trade that pick for more immediate help, something other than him. Like, I really think he's, I don't know. What do you think of Culver? I mean, I think he's kind of not the piece that they needed there.
I'm sorry, I had on mute. Yeah, no, I agree with you there, Nate. But to me, I guess the answer to the question is bigger than is Culver going to be good or not, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, that was just step one.
But yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. So, okay, yeah. Yes, I agree with you on Culver. Yeah,
yeah. So I mean, other than that, you know, you can try to talk to him and say, hey, we're going to try and do better. I mean, you can try and move Wiggins maybe with this like slight renaissance that he's had. They can do better, but he's under contract through 2023. They aren't going to have salary cap space anytime soon.
It's hard to see a pathway where they can get that other star. It's just it's hard to see that path. I mean, they've got some salary coming off the books, you know, next couple of years, but it's just yeah, they're in a spot, and it seems like it's the third time. It seems like you know you had KG, and then you had Kevin Love. And now we're right back in the same place, and I'm not trying to look at this. I'm sure that – you know what surprised me about the whole aggregation was that I expected that there would be a bunch of Wolves fans who would be at my throat and be angry and just be and maybe those people exist. I don't know. I stopped paying attention, but I saw a contingent of people who were – they were just so fatalistic, and I didn't know whether to credit that fan base for just being – fairly objective and savvy or just lament how this team has beaten the hope out of them and they just expect that every guy leaves and so it's time to get on with it and see how many draft picks. But or another way to look at it, maybe Towns just doesn't inspire the kind of love and belief that the other two guys did for whatever reason.
Man, I'm gonna put it to you like this. As long as Carl Anthony Towns plays in Minnesota, nothing's going to change. The only hope he has, he is basically where Sacramento was with DeMarcus Cousins a few years back. As long as he's there, there is nothing, there are no indicators or stimuli to indicate to him that I need to change anything. Everything is everybody else's fault. How do I know? Because every opportunity this organization has rolled out the red carpet. This dude doesn't like you? We get him out of here. This coach, you don't like him? We're firing him. How much money can we get? We'll give you all the money. As long as your best friend is a free agent, we're going to try our darndest. Every opportunity they've had to show him that, look, dude, you're great. but we need some more out of you. They have. They're just showing them whatever you want. And so whatever you bring in there is not is only going to be, if it doesn't jive with what he has in his head, you're not going to get along with that. He's not going to go along with it. And so I look at that situation and I say to myself, you got to cut the cord for two reasons. One is I don't think he'll ever change as long as the only hope he has you can have for him as a basketball player to change, to prioritize the right things, is if he goes somewhere completely different and on day one they say, look, we don't play that shit here. Other than that, it's not going to happen. The other thing is, of all the assets you have on your roster, he is the one that legitimately can bring you back a decent haul. Because, Nate, nobody's falling for this Andrew Wiggins thing. And by the way, since he's come back from injury, he's shooting like 31% from three. That was fun while it lasted. That was fun. One of my favorite things about NBA media is to watch people roll over for 3 or 4 weeks of something after we've had 6 years of something else. Remember when Dwayne Wade was shooting threes and Gabby Union was like, he was in the gym all summer. And I said, Gabby, no one goes 11 years being terrible at something, spends a summer on it, and then turns into a 40% three-point shooter. It just doesn't happen like that. And so the infatuation with Wiggins, I want to believe that most front offices are like, all right, whatever. Like, he had a nice hot streak at the beginning of the year. You guys were 10-8. Beautiful. Since then, they won two games in the month of December.
So you would go to the Celtics or one of these teams where you could potentially pry a decent haul out of, and you would go that move and just cut this off of the pass and not try to bring him back into the fold and build around. That's where you would go with it. Just rebuild again.
I'm not going fire sale on him. But I'm definitely listening. And if I get something that's a legitimately good deal, then I'm doing it. Because I just don't think success for him will happen there. I think they can be successful. It's not with him or Wiggins in the picture. I think he can be successful. It's not in Minnesota, though. So I don't want to make this seem like a Towns indictment. Because, again, Minnesota is clearly the worst organization in the history of the NBA. I know it's easy to pile on the Knicks. I know the Knicks have done a lot to catch up since the year 2000. But again, to recap for people, they've been out of the first round one time. They've been in the playoffs four times.
They were out of the first round four times when they lost all those draft picks.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's good to know that, you know, someone here really appreciates my incredible son.
Can we get a real podcaster now?
He's so funny.
maybe Rick Carlisle can't appreciate the incredible genius of this humor, but you guys are right there just lapping it up. It's great.
I'm here for you, Nate. I'm here for all your comedic styles.
Yeah. That's a great video project, Nate stand up.
Oh, yes. That's the joke.
You know what else? What also?
But my wife says she's married McBain. Me because I'm very funny.
See, people, that was a joke.
He is funny though. Like, yo, man. Like, I know. I'm not here. Anyway, this is me stalling because for some reason, Basketball Reference has turned into the most arduous website for my computer.
So they added too many nicknames. Actually, it's slowing everything up.
Did you see? You'll really appreciate this. You probably haven't read this yet. Tibbs' interview with Frank Isola in The Athletic yesterday.
Boy.
Because if you read that, he reels off about 97 stats in a row about his tenure in Minnesota and how awesome it was. Like, he makes it sound like he had the greatest tenure there in the history of coaching. I think he must have just been reading it off a piece of paper to Isola or – even more disturbing that he had all these stats memorized. It was incredible.
All right. So let me give you guys some fun facts, right? Minnesota's been in effect since 1989-90. So this is their 30th season, right? In 30 years, let's do a little Tom's trivia. How many times have the Timberwolves won 50 games in a season? But I'm throwing this out to both of you guys.
Once.
I go once.
Oh, no, they had a couple more in the early KG years. I'm going to say three times.
Three times.
Wow.
Out of those three times, how many times did they make it out of the first round of the playoffs? No, yeah, that's not once. A trivia. That's just a fact.
It was the Cassell year.
It was the Garnett MVP year. Basically, they took them having the best player in the league to get out of the first round. They lost in the first round a record 7 times in a row. It's never happened in the history of the NBA. It hasn't happened since. 7 times in a row. That, by the way, losing in the first round 7 times in a row, followed by a conference finals loss, that represents the good old days for this organization.
And they didn't even have Tracy McGrady on their team.
Maybe Thibodeau has a point with all those stats.
I mean, like, I'm telling you, like, all right, so 7 times in a row and 8 times, all right, they did that thing, okay? If you take out the first year where they were 40-42, that's 7 years of them being 500 or better. They've done that only once outside of those 7 years, and that was the Jimmy Butler. You have 8 out of 30 years of your existence. You could say we're above 500. Above 500. Above 500? That's what we're...
I mean, it would be keeping – I mean, look, this would be a dream scenario probably for the Warriors, they wouldn't admit. It would be keeping with that kind of bad decision-making track record to do some sort of D'Lo for Towns trade that then just doesn't go well at all.
No. It's got to be D'Lo joining Towns. But it's got to be over there. I'm telling you, if they come over here, you can't combine those two. You can rehab these projects separately. You bring them together, and then there goes the neighborhood.
Ah, man. Okay. I want to extend my thanks and gratitude to Amin for stopping by, to Nate for stopping by, to all the aggregators who make the world go around. We love each and every one of you. And, of course, to the listeners, may you have a pleasant and fulfilling and successful 2020. We will be back talking NBA. Stay safe, everybody.
Thank you so much for joining us at the House of Strauss. For the House Overtime, we got 20 or some odd minutes left with Nate and Amin. We're talking about Nate's agent power rankings project he has coming up, and also a long discussion on the movie Shrek 2, if you can believe it. And it was pretty, pretty good. If you are not a subscriber to The Athletic, you can go to theathletic.com/House of Strauss for 40% off. That's as little as $2.99 a month. That's like less than a coffee at Starbucks now. So it's well worth it, obviously, and you'd be supporting Count the Dings and independent journalism. All right, peace.
They started trapping.
Let's have a real question by a real journalist here.